You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues that make and break our lives. And our guest for this hour on the show is Javier Rosa. Javier, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Eric. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you on the show. Now, what song would you like to start with?
Probably Burbuja de Amor.
Okay. Very good. Let me just... Here we go. And do you want to say anything about that before we start, or do you want to comment on it afterwards?
Yeah, afterwards.
Okay, here we go. Juan Luis Guerra, Burbujas de Amor.
Tengo un corazón mutilado de esperanza y de razón. Corazón que madruga donde quiera, ay, 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 ese corazón se desnuda de impaciencia ante tu voz. Pobre corazón que no atrapa su cordura, quisiera ser un pez para tocar mi nariz en tu pecera y hacer burbujas de amor. Pasar la noche en vela, mojado en ti, un pez, para bordar de corales tu cintura y hacer siluetas de amor bajo la luna. Oh, 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 saciar esta locura, mojado en ti. Con un ancla imprescindible de ilusión, sueña corazón, no te nubles de amargura. Ay, 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 este corazón se desnuda de impaciencia ante tu voz. Pobre corazón que no atrapa su cordura, quisiera ser un pez para tocar mi nariz en tu pecera y hacer burbujas de amor por donde quiera. Oh, 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 pasar la noche en vela, mojado en ti, un pez para bordar de corales tu cintura y hacer siluetas de amor bajo la luna. Oh, 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 saciar esta locura. Pasar la noche en vela, mojado en ti, un pez, para bordar de cayenas tu cintura y hacer siluetas de amor bajo la luna. Oh, 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 saciar esta locura, mojado en ti. Pasar la noche en vela, mojado en ti, un pez.
Para bordar de cayenas tu cintura y hacer siluetas de amor bajo la luna.
Oh, 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 vaciar esta locura.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest for this hour is Javier Rosa. If I'm doing too many, pushing too many dials and doing too many things all at once. Anyway, so Javier, it's good to have you here.
Yes, thank you.
And so tell me a little bit about the song and a little bit about who you are.
Well, this song, you know, this is one of the songs that I chose because it reminds me of when I was a teenager, when I was in high school. So, you know, good times in high school, hanging out with friends and going out and, you know, doing a little bit of mischief, not anything too crazy, but yeah.
Right. But testing your wings, yes. Feeling your oats, as it were.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. About myself, I was born and raised in San Juan, Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. or Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
Came here to Ithaca about almost 13 years ago.
Right.
And I'm an engineer, a structural engineer. Mm-hmm. I also practice martial arts.
Uh-huh.
I've been doing so since I was 15.
Right. And what kinds of things catch your attention? Who are you in a sense of what are the kinds of things that you care about as a human being?
Well, that's would be a broad aspect.
In
general, I mean, health, mm-hmm. Kids,
right,
family,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Work as well,
right,
mm-hmm. Free time,
right, yes, yes,
sleep, time to sleep.
Keep it really basic.
Yes.
Number one, I should know this as an engineer. You probably have a very practical bent to all of these questions.
Yes.
And the worst question I could ask would be the one I just did.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So good. So you know what made your experience, what thing have you kind of done or been through, what one has kind of helped to kind of most clearly kind of set the course of your life?
Well, I would have to say, and this is not a very happy thing, I would have to say 14 years ago, my wife and I got separated.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I guess that really... was a defining moment for me,
mm-hmm.
And then also led to me moving here.
Right, right. As part of the not separating or just being closer to your kids.
Yeah. Oh yeah, well, yeah, and then yeah, you know, yeah, getting back together.
Right. Okay. So let's go back and when a moment redefines your life,
mm-hmm.
it redefines what went before it,
mm-hmm.
as well as what went after it. So how did it redefine? How you see yourself as a younger person, you know, differently because of that?
Well, mainly the old saying of live and learn, you know.
Right.
When events like that happen in your life, it's just really, for me personally, makes me look into myself,
mm-hmm.
and see, you know, because I guess in relationship, any relationship, not just intimate, but with friends, family, kids, when something's wrong, is usually the fault of both sides, not mm-hmm. just one.
Right.
So then makes me, you know, look inside myself and say, well, what was my part, you know, in order for this to happen, and basically try to learn from it, because I mean, everything happens for a reason. I'm a Christian.
Uh-huh.
Raised Catholic.
But you can also be just a consequentialist and things happen for a reason.
Yes.
And a good science, yes, works the same way.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then that point in time, and it was very tough,
mm-hmm.
because I've been together for a while, had two kids,
mm-hmm.
and then of course I was on my own, which I had never been on my own.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because in Hispanic and Latin culture,
right,
for the most part, especially people my age, they stay in their house with their parents until it's time to get married.
Right.
Even in Puerto Rico, kids that go to college on the west side of the island, which is like 2 hours away,
right,
they come back every weekend home and then keep commuting, and then once they're done they find work. They stay at the house, sometimes they find their own apartment but still close to home,
mm-hmm. sure,
but then for the most part, yeah, kids stay in the house,
right, and that's true of traditional cultures and rural cultures where, mm-hmm. I was from, for those who didn't have to migrate out because they, mm-hmm. couldn't find work. They'd be back home.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. And the same thing happened to me. I mean, I was raised by my maternal grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
So then...
How did that happen?
Oh, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Well, my parents divorced when I was young. I was 9.
Mm-hmm.
My mother had a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So they divorced when I was 9. Before then, both of my parents were working professionals. My father's an engineer.
Uh-huh.
And then my mother was an accountant.
Uh-huh.
So then her parents would take care of me during work, always, since I was little.
Right.
And after they divorced, my mother went down an emotional spiral. And so then they had to intervene and help. So then actually my mother, my sister, and myself came to live with my grandparents.
Uh-huh.
So then we lived there. So then they basically look after all three of us, including my mother. Then at one point in time, my mother left for our own apartment. We left with her. Some issues arose again. And then my sister and I went back to my grandparents, and we were there for them, you know, until we got married.
Right, right. They just became your family,
yeah, yes,
right?
The family, your, yes.
Yeah,
yeah. Yep.
And so, how did making the transition from your grandmother's parents' house, your home of origin, to marriage? What made that hard, or you know, was that part of what made it difficult transitioning into married life, or?
No, I mean, not really, because there was always there.
Right.
I mean, we were in Puerto Rico, so all the families tend to be mm-hmm. close. So then there was there supporting us and helping us. And actually, my grandparents took care of my son, my uh-huh. first one. And then all my three kids got to meet all the great-grandparents on my side.
Wow.
Because up until 2010, I have all four alive.
Right.
So, and now I have only one left.
That's a lot of death in a short time.
Yes, yes. Basically, in three years. Because the last mm-hmm. one, not the last one, I still have one, but the last one that died was last year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the one that I have left is my paternal grandmother,
uh-huh.
which also the grandparents on my father's side also were always there, you know, mm-hmm. for us, especially when we went on the weekends with my dad
right.
after they divorced. He would drop us off there to spend time with them, with his mm-hmm. parents.
So how did you end up coming to Ithaca in the aftermath of this separation?
Okay, so, after Rosa, that's her name.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, her first name happens to be my last name. So she never liked Rosa.
Yeah.
It's confusing. She left with the kids. I stayed. We had an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed there for like probably 6 months more.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I was feeling alone and a little bit depressed. So then my grandmother said, oh, come back home. So I did. But then she came here. The reason why she came here and I ended up here is because they already knew the area.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother studied up at Cornell. And she lives here too. And she works here downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I ended up here. She knew the area. I've never been to this area. I've traveled to the U.S. since I was little, different places. Most Florida for right. Disney World.
It's a very, yeah.
Yes, that's my favorite vacation place. But never to this area. Mm-hmm. So the first time I traveled here, which was just a month after she had left, I immediately fell in love with the area. And I came, it was September, so it was autumn.
Beautiful, but pending disaster.
Yeah, the cold. Well, it was cold, you know, a hard transition.
Yeah.
And then when I finally moved here, I moved around August. So
the following year or two?
The 2 years after.
2 years, then, yeah.
The first time I came here was 1999, September of 1999. I finally moved here in August of 2001. So when I came here in August, you know, I guess I lived through the transition from mild weather to colder weather, and then actually that winter wasn't that bad compared to the following one
right.
and subsequent ones. So I guess you know, it kind of gave me a nice welcome
mm-hmm.
to this area.
And just I know that I don't want to belabor this, and also this is you picked a very poignant life defining moment. How are you changing as you live through the aftermath of having separated and facing some things about yourself? How are you? How do you see yourself changing?
I guess personally, I believe that we're constantly changing and evolving.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it, you know, when something like this happens, makes makes me look inside myself and see, you know, what do I need to change or modify or adapt in order to evolve and become a better person. Mm-hmm. And in all aspects of the life, not just regarding parent, you know, husbands, mm-hmm. you know,
sure.
worker.
Usually if things are not right, they're not right in little ways in lots of places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. What song would you like to cut to next?
Let's do 2x2.
Okay. And do you want to introduce that now, or?
Sure. This is a song that reminds me, again, also when I was a teenager, particularly when I would, in the new wave era in Puerto Rico,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and I would hang out a lot with one of my cousins, which he's like a brother to me. Mm-hmm. His name is Manolo. And then, you know, we would go out and parties and dance and, you know, have a good time. So it reminds me of that time.
Okay. So this is 2x2 by Chris. Chris and 2x2, and our guest for this hour is Javier Rosa. And so, Javier, you are an engineer, structural mm-hmm. engineer.
Yes.
And you came to Ithaca, but not for a job with Cornell or IC or any of these other things. So, what is it like what has the move been like from Puerto Rico to Ithaca, personally and social professionally?
Well. Actually, professionally, mm-hmm. Better.
Mm-hmm.
The job that I found here with Tatum Engineering has been fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually through Carmen. She's my mother-in-law.
Uh-huh.
Because she had a friend, and then he's a plumber, and then he knew the president of the company, Ian Shapiro.
Right.
And Mickey. Then yes,
Mickey to some, yes.
Yes. So and then they forwarded me the information, and I went for an interview.
Uh-huh.
And I even remember, in the interview, a particular question that I was toying in my head, like how to answer that, is the question that always comes up. So what do you expect to be paid?
Right.
So that's always a tricky question, right? Because usually the person interviewing has maybe a figure in mind, and then if the person that says, oh, probably this, if it's less, they'll be like, oh, okay, yeah. So it's a little tricky.
Right. You don't want to go too low. You definitely don't want to go too high. Yep. Yeah.
So, basically my response was, well, which is true in Puerto Rico, engineers or a person in my position at the time, which I was just a designer, are underpaid. So then he made me an offer, and I accepted. Mm-hmm. And then here I am. And it took 3 months when I moved from Puerto Rico to here. I kept working, not for my firm that I used to work over there, but there were some architects, and they were giving me freelance work when I came here. So right. It was via email.
Right. So you were working remotely.
Yep, for 3 months. Yep, for 3 months. And then after 3 months, I found a job at Tatum. And then that was it.
Mm-hmm.
So professionally, better. Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely a big step up.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding regular life, I miss the food.
Right.
Obviously. My other family members are over there. I miss them as well.
Right.
The weather at times mm-hmm. like this, the weather definitely for sure. Actually, around the holidays as well. I don't know. It's because of the the mix of Spanish and American influence in Puerto Rico regarding Christmas time.
Right.
To me, it seems a little bit more. I don't know how to explain it. Like even more friendly, more warmth around the holidays.
Uh huh. Yeah, so people are more open to one another in Puerto Rico than they are here around the holidays.
Yeah, it seems that way also. And then also the regarding the political correctness,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which personally that's something that is a little tricky for me because I think us as people we've gone a little bit too far from it. Try to shield every individual from it,
Uh-huh.
So because for instance here. You have to say happy holidays,
right?
Because you don't know, and some people might get offended.
Right. That's true. That's mm-hmm. true. And one of the things that people don't widely appreciate, though I've been saying it on this show for several months, is that we are a Christian minority mm-hmm. county, and we are also have probably twice as many or two and a half times as many non-religious and atheist folks here mm-hmm. than most other places in the country, about 45%. We have just about as many non-religious folks as we have Christians.
Yes.
And we have about 10 or 15% Jewish, but the vast majority of those are secular non-religious mm-hmm. Jews. And then we have a significant Buddhist population and a significant Hindu population and a very small Muslim, but still significant in some ways in terms of its presence and effect mm-hmm. on the environment. So we are a very complicated place to mm-hmm. have religious celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to feel warm and good because there just aren't that many people. And even those who are devout oftentimes don't know how to be happy
mm-hmm.
or delighted around others who may not share. And we haven't really mm-hmm. learned how to share those feelings. So yes. I do think there's a and one of the guests a couple of weeks ago said there's just kind of like a you have to be Ithaca correct.
Mm-hmm.
There's a level of rigidity that's unique to here.
Yeah.
That's not even as forgiving as other places.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep. Yeah. So and in contrast in Puerto Rico, 2% approximately are atheist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then out of the remaining 98%, 85% are Catholic.
Right.
And the remaining percentage it's divided among the other religions, right. Different religions.
And Protestants too.
Protestants.
My historic denomination had a strong, small but strong presence of Puerto Rico and Haiti and the Dominican Republic, you know, because of missions work back in the 1800s. Yep. Interesting. So, what are, you know, you work for a firm that prides itself on sustainability, and how has that element of your work changed over time or become a focus in your
life? Well, and I've said this before there to my coworkers in the office and meetings, I'm you know, pro sustainability and green design, and you know, I take pride when doing a structural design to really incorporate the structural members into the architectural facade to make sure that you know, the energy performs more efficient, meaning that, you know, if you have too many structures occupying space of insulation, then you're going to have more heat loss, and then utility bills are high, so they're using more energy.
Right.
So we try to detail that so then that doesn't happen. And when I go on inspections, I take a look at those things as well. On a personal level, regarding global warming, to me, it is critical, but I believe, and this is my personal opinion, that it's more of, you know, the government exaggerating a little bit just to make sure that we don't hit, you know, that critical point soon. I mean, the Earth has its own cycle, which, if you look historically, the different cycles that the Earth goes through with ice ages and all the other things that have occurred.
Or I mean, even millions of years where the temperature just might be as much as 10 or 15 degrees different as opposed to just 4 or 5.
So it's bound to happen at some point, I think. But us as humans, we tend to just ignore and neglect stuff until it's there.
Right.
And then everybody's clamoring, oh my God, what are we going to do?
Right.
So on a personal level, that's how I think and feel regarding that aspect.
Right.
But doesn't mean that it's, you know, less important, and doesn't mean that I'm not going to do what I've been doing for, you know, regarding my work, regarding that scenario.
Right. And what I hear is kind of you're doing work that contributes to minimizing global warming, but you're committed to not being a strident reaction, a person that has an axe to grind in every venue that you're at.
Yes.
And people kind of have to get on board in the time that they need to. And there's some, you know, that is a perfectly, and given at your temperament, that's a person's personal choice. So what is it about engineering? What is it about your work that you find pleasure and satisfaction in?
Problem solving.
Uh-huh.
The aspect of problem solving.
Yep. Just give me a problem and let me work it.
Yes.
And do you like to work with others, or do you really like to take it back by yourself and just...
No, I don't mind working with others at all. No. I mean, the other structural engineer at the office, you know, Yossi, I mean, we work great together,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
And then we support each other as well. I have no problem in working with others. And actually, in engineering school, they teach that, you know, to work as a team, because usually that's what happens in the profession, the design profession. You have the architect, then you have the structural engineer, the mechanical engineer, the electrical engineer. It needs to be a collaboration between all of them. Then when the project's going to be built, then you have the contractor involved.
Let's go to a song, because we want to play these selections. What would you like to go to next?
Otro Día Más Sin Verte, John Secada.
Yes, and this will be quite familiar to people. This had a lot of airtime.
Oh,
And that was John Secada with the Spanish version of Otro Día Más Sin Verte, Another Day Without You. So our guest on this hour is Javier Rosa. And one of the questions that I like to ask of guests is, you know, when you were growing up and you had, you know, you were raised to believe that these are certain things that you can do and be and know, and this is what the world's going to be like when you get out there. But most of us kind of grow up and things aren't quite what we thought they would be. So how has life turned out differently than you had been raised to expect it to be?
Harder, definitely harder. Yes, because I mean, when I was a kid, you know, growing up in my grandparents' household, a particular task that I always thought that, you know, it was seeing my grandfather sitting down, writing checks to pay the bills. So I'm like, oh, that's, you know, that's nothing, you know, and he makes a lot of money. He was a veterinarian. Mm-hmm. He makes a lot of money, you know, and I would make comments. He would be like, wait until you see. And I'm like, it's going to be okay. I'll have a profession, a good job, and I'll be okay. And then now,
right,
as a professional, having a job and then making checks and making payments,
right,
yes, it's definitely different. You know, it's not as easy as I thought it was going to be.
Right. Right. And when he was sitting down writing out checks to pay the bills and stuff, did you ever really see what the income and the expenses were in the family? Was that part of what you learned growing up or no?
No, not particularly. Not until I was older,
right,
that you know, I had conversations with him and, you know, he would talk about that. Usually, no, I didn't know the income to debt ratio and all that stuff, mm-hmm, that I also learn now.
Right, right.
You know, the hard way, I guess.
Yeah. No. And most of us do. And I think that's one of, I mean, what's been hard for me is that I grew up in, you know, pretty significant rural poverty, but I also grew up when the minimum wage was at a level that would be $10 or $15 an hour in today's money,
mm-hmm,
because that's what the minimum wage was back in when I started working in 1970, even 60, well, seven. I started working when I was 11, before it was even legal. And I had a checking account right away and a checkbook that I had to balance, and I contributed to the family's income. So I kind of saw that, but most of my peers didn't. And for most of them, it was a shock,
mm-hmm,
to realize how much things cost and how you have to juggle things in order to make sure that you have reserves and, mm-hmm, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Yes.
It's a tough row. But also, I imagine that conversation would be harder when you're going across two generations,
mm-hmm,
because your grandparents have a way of life that they have been secure in probably for 40 years,
mm-hmm,
and you're just kind of wondering, well, what gives here?
Yeah.
It can't be that hard. It's not that hard for you. You've got it all figured out.
Yes, and it is. The other thing that... that I guess it's harder than I thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first I thought that I wasn't going to be able to have kids.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, for some whatever reason when I was a kid, I thought that I wasn't going to be able to, not because I wasn't going to be able to get married, but because I wasn't going to be able to biologically.
Right, yeah.
I don't know why that thought just popped, uh-huh, into my head, uh-huh, when I was young. So then, of course, after I had, you know, kids, the other thing that I thought it would be different is, you know, realistically, you know, people don't know this, they don't have kids, but raising a kid is hard. Trying to basically input into them your moral standards, your beliefs, you know, ideas, trying to educate them to make them an individual that is successful in life.
Right.
In all their aspects.
I think what I hear, the hard part is being able to make sure they're exposed to what you want them to have in ways that they can really process it and still give them a chance to choose it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't force it, but
no,
you can't not present it.
Yes.
And it's really hard finding that space.
But it doesn't mean that a parent from time to time might not try to force
something.
Yeah.
Yes. And unless it's a crisis where they need it desperately, it usually has negative consequences,
mm-hmm,
unintended negative consequences.
Yes.
And those are things that we have to kind of learn about how to deal with each other.
At the upfront, negative consequences. In the long run, they see, you know, oh, you know, you were right at this point in time. So
right. But it's often as a matter of having to forgive the parent a misstep and the child willfulness that may not have been helpful. Mm-hmm. But I think parenting is a crucible for learning forgiveness.
Yes.
And being a child, really being a child and growing up in the eyes of your parents or your grandparents, mm-hmm. is learning how to forgive them for not being what you may have needed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I also personally believe that, and my grandfather told me this, every kid is different. Every parent is different.
Yep.
There's no book out there, even though there are supposedly books. He would say those, they're garbage. You know, there's no books because we are all different and react different ways to the same situation. So you just have to, you know, just do the best that you can.
Right. And I think there's a value to having confidence in whatever you have will, in some sense, you can figure your way out as long as you don't turn nasty.
Yes.
Yeah. As long as you don't turn mean. Now, you had an experience with your parents you were alluding to, or your grandparents that you were alluding to, with these, you call the clubs that they belong to.
Yes. They belong to the Club Exchange.
Yes.
The Exchange Club.
Exchange Club. And I'm assuming that's where they learned about different culture. Was this culture or was this exchange around careers or money or what was this exchange?
Well, it was in Puerto Rico, but I think it was in general, but probably more regarding careers and,
right.
and all the other stuff, because there were different professionals within. I mean, like I said, my grandfather was a vet.
Right.
My grandmother used to be a teacher, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then the other people there that I met, I can't remember what they do, but they were also different professions.
And Kiwanis and Rotary and Sertoma are these clubs that have you have to have a different role in order to be a member, and they mix it up and they do some service stuff and they do some fun stuff.
Yep.
So we're going to play a song from your time there. Do you want to talk about it now or after we play it?
I'm sure I can talk. So it's basically it. This song that we're going to play, it's known here as the chicken dance. They usually play in weddings. I found out that they play it in weddings. In Puerto Rico, they used to play it a lot in these activities that they would do for dancing. And, you know, at some point they would play this song and everyone, you know, my grandparents and their friends, which were around the same age, would get up and dance and they would have a blast, a good time. So that reminds me of seeing my grandparents, you know, having a blast at those dances.
Well, this one will play in memory of your grandparents and we'll let people get a chuckle while they listen to it.
Okay.
Pajaritos a Volar, the chicken dance, and that's a little lighthearted interlude here. Yes, yes. So when you were on Puerto Rico, and I always want to say Puerto Abe because that's just my gringo way of having learned Spanish here in the States, actually in Colombia, but it's... So when you were in Puerto Rico and you were traveling to Florida and stuff, Puerto Rico has taken a real hit in the last 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. What is it that you are concerned for about back home at this point in your life? Because the economy there has really, really taken a serious nosedive in recent months.
Yep. Basically that, yes. The politics and the economy. Mm-hmm. And of course I speak to my relatives there, my family members there, and I always ask, and they say the same thing, especially not recently, the economy is here now, it's worse, it's a disaster. Right. And growing up, they would always say that in Puerto Rico, what the national sport is?
What?
Politics.
Oh yes.
That's the national sport.
Yes.
I volunteered in a couple occasions to work at elections at the schools, mm-hmm. To help
with the voting.
And always a fight would break out. Fortunately, not in the schools. They would take each classroom for regarding the last names, the letters. Uh-huh. Fortunately, where I was, there wasn't, but somewhere there in the school or in other schools, a fight would break out. That's why they say it's a national sport in politics, because people really take it on an intense personal level, the politics, if you're not from this party, you're from this other party, you're evil or you're no good or, stuff like that.
And so that's the kind of polarization we've seen here in the last 20 or 30 years. Has that always been true in Puerto Rico?
Regarding that aspect?
Yeah.
As long as I can remember, it was like that.
Heavily polarized. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Although here, my perception, mm-hmm. and this is also my uncle said this to me, he lives here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. He's been living for a very long, long time. He said that over here, you have the issues with the politics and the corruption and all that stuff. But then at least, you get the appearance of the feel that they're trying to do something for the people. the appearance.
Right.
Here. In Puerto Rico, no, that doesn't exist. Not even they're trying to make the illusion that they're doing something for the people. No.
Right.
Over there, it's not like that at all.
Wow. That's incredibly painful.
It's unfortunate.
There's a level of cynicism behind that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I'm going to play your number five song, so we have time for a closing conversation, mm-hmm. and the last song. So this is Mark Anthony and Dímelo.
Con esta pasión, si es que me deseas, de nadie.
was Mark Anthony in a Spanish version of Dímelo, I Need to Know. And our guest in this hour is Javier Rosa, and this is the last segment of the show for this hour. And what one of the things that I like to hear from people are the different things that they do to restore their sense of balance or optimism or strength or just how they kind of what they do to keep themselves going on a practical level. You know, what are the sorts of things you do on a regular basis or daily just to kind of have an attitude adjustment or to take stock?
Really, it goes down to meditation and prayer. Meditation is the martial arts aspect,
right? And what do you do in the martial arts? How does that? You know, what form do you practice, and how does it serve as meditation for you?
Well, my primary martial art is Taekwondo, traditional, not Olympic
right.
style, traditional Taekwondo. But I like all martial arts, and I actually experimented going to other styles of schools to just to practice, just to see. I like them all,
right?
But that's my primary. And I currently teach self-defense to some of the people at work. So basically, what I do is just either just quiet down and relax, and if I'm in the car, just take a little bit of a longer drive just to relax and think. Sometimes I leave the radio on, but I'm really not paying attention. The times I just turn it off.
Right.
Sometimes in my house, I would just go into the computer room, which is also the guest room, and then just do movements. Sometimes slow, sometimes fast. And the other thing is that I teach once a week, you know, the self-defense.
Sure.
Actually, that's also a form while teaching. For me,
right.
That's a form for me to relieve stress and find balance.
Yeah.
And then because I get also a lot of pleasure in teaching martial arts.
Yeah.
You know, passing on what I know and showing them the practical aspect of it. Because in martial arts, there are a lot of stuff that people teach that in reality doesn't work. And I know because I've tried it, you know, certain things.
Right.
So I now have boiled down at this point in my life after 26 years of martial arts. Being in the martial arts, I have, you know, a certain, you know, movements that work. So basically that's what I teach.
Right. And your body, you have body memories of those
movements. Yes, muscle memory,
so
yes.
That you can.
Oh, yes.
Instantly. I'm yawning because I'm getting into a position, which is my meditation position, which is a run of relaxation. Yes. And so it induces a yawn. You also said that you pray. What is prayer to you? What is the process? What do you mean by prayer?
I mean, I was raised Catholic, so making prayers to God,
right?
To just help me, guide me, illuminate me with everything that's happening, so I can
prayers of supplication.
Yes, to so I can do the right thing, and not compromise myself or my moral standards.
Right. Or when you have to figure out what you have to learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, those are all. I mean,
yes, that's when please illuminate me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No. And actually, we only really learn from our mistakes. And the life of faith isn't to try to be perfect without a blemish, but it's try to be whole in terms of healing from the damage that we've done to ourselves and others, and that we have made the place a little better, the world a little better.
Yeah.
You have one last selection here, and I just do you want to comment on it before we call
yes.
this?
My last selection is "Carry On, My Wayward Son."
Uh-huh.
By Kansas.
Yes.
Why?
Why?
Because this is also, I guess, dedicated to my son Javier. Because we watched this series. I don't know if you heard about this series, Supernatural.
No, I haven't.
Okay, so it's a great series. I mean, and my son loved it. I got him addicted to it.
So then
that's basically one of our bonding times. I have managed to make a good relationship with him since he was a little. So watching that series is like bonding time for us watching it. So every time we hear this song, we think of the series.
Oh, so this is the theme song from the series?
Not the theme song, but one of the songs that they play at certain points in every series, every season.
Oh, wow. Okay. So our guest this hour on the Made of Clay Report has been Javier Rosa. Javier, it's been wonderful to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we're going to carry on with Wayward Son.
Carry on, my wayward son.
voice, I rose above the noise and confusion, just to get a glimpse beyond this illusion. I was soaring ever higher, but I flew too high. Though my eyes could see, I still was a blind man. Though my mind could think, I still was a madman. I hear the voices when I'm dreaming. I can hear them say, carry on, Hollywood, son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, W201CD, Lansing, and this has been the Made of Clay Report.